Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolsky, joined, as always, by my co-host, Nick Pollock, back from a lovely, lovely weekend in Philadelphia.
What is happening? Yes! Went to the game on Friday. It was a wonderful time. Watched the complete game. Shout out of Christopher Sanchez with PL community members. It was lovely. And we're going to try and make that a yearly thing now. So it was a great time. Wonderful park, Citizens Bank Park. I've never been there before. Mm-hmm. And the only thing is just, look, I saw your hedges in center and I saw exactly where you should be putting your camera well. Okay? You don't have to settle for a bottom tier camera angle. Okay? I believe in you that you can put it front early, just where the people are. Just push them back. Just make a little thing. Put the cameras there. Everybody's happy.
The camera. I want to be where the people are. That's what the camera wants to be.
Well, maybe that
where
should
the people are.
Set up for Yariel Rodriguez tonight. You know, Yariel's world.
Yeah, that couldn't believe that start happened. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah,
we'll get to that later. I'm sure. Listen. If you are listening to this and you have not gone to any of the Pitcherlist meetups when they are in areas that you can go to them, you should go to them. They're fun, man. It's a really good time. It's just people who like baseball hanging out. Oftentimes talking about baseball, but sometimes talking about other stuff. And it's a good way to watch a game. And sometimes people just let you sit there and watch a game. You know, you don't have to chat your ear off, but it's nice to interact with people. You've read their work, you've engaged with them online, or just other baseball fans. It's just a nice way to watch a game. So make sure you go out and do it.
Exactly. And you know, just shout out to everyone who came by. You know who you are. And there's also one guy who shouted at me, believe it or not. I don't know who you are. You just pointed at me and said, Nick, love your stuff, and walked away. And you're dope, whoever you are, man. Love your stuff.
That's cool. Love your stuff. And my dad said that exact phrase to Keanu Reeves once. Saw him in New York while he was walking our family dog. And he was like, hey, love your movies. Yeah. And Keanu Reeves was like, thanks. thanks. We work hard on them. Like, seemed like a just super nice dude. You know?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. So what we got today?
So if you have looked at the cover boy image, you might know, and it runs a little bit with the overall theme for the show. So the list for today is called Hit Me Baby One More Time.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Yeah. Britney Spears up in this.
Yeah. I was going to go, oh, baby.
Oh, that's pretty good too.
Yeah.
And I'm here for this, Eric. You know, let it loose. Let it fly.
It just works because She did accent the word a little bit. It was enunciated in a weird way that works for Bybee.
She definitely has her flair.
Yeah.
To it. 100%.
She might have been saying Bybee. I mean, we won't know for sure.
Yeah. The world would never know. Of a tits of roll pop.
And that fits with the theme of the show, which is 90s TV shows.
Ah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
So I was thinking about this. We're not going to get political here, but after the debate, people were sharing clips of the show Dinosaurs. Do you remember the show Dinosaurs?
Of course I do.
And so there were clips.
I'm the baby. God, I love you.
The baby. Don't hit the baby. There were clips from that show that people were spreading out across the internet as being like incredibly prescient at the time for like what we're dealing with now. And I was like, you know what? Dinosaurs is a great show. The 90s had some good shows. The 90s had some weird shows.
They had shows,
They had some shows, and we all sat down to watch them at the same time. So those are going to be what our tiers are for today.
Yep. All right. I'm looking forward to this. What do we got?
Let's do it. We're starting at the top of the list with tier number one. A lot of the same names up in here. It starts with starting pitcher number one, Zach Wheeler. And then we go to number two, Tyler Glasnow. Number three, Tarek Skubal. Number four, Chris Sale. Number five, Garrett Crochet. Number six, Corbin Burns. Number seven, Paul Skeens. Number eight, Max Fried. And number nine, Cole Reagans. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
So when I was a kid, 4:30 p.m. in the afternoon Eastern time was a very special moment because I needed to make sure that whatever I was doing, I was back in front of the TV as the lightning bolt struck behind him as he stood on top of the tower. And that would be Batman the Animated Series.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's just, oh my gosh, it still holds up. It's so good.
When you were going for after school, I didn't know if you were going into like the TRL range, but this was a better choice for you.
Oh my gosh, yes. Without a doubt. Yeah.
A lot of the same names in here. Garrett Crochet up 4 spots. Paul Skeens up 3 spots. Is this more about renewed, just kind of like faith in those two guys, or more about some of the other guys moving down?
Well, traditionally, the top tier is filled with veterans because we just know the track record. And as the season goes on, we start to change that, right? As we reassessed Spencer Strider last year, we moved him up the list as we continue to go on. And really with Crochet and Skeens, they've done nothing really to suggest otherwise that, yeah, this is who I am. Crochet leads all of the majors in strikeouts at the moment, and Skeens has been absolutely everything as advertised. So when you look at everyone else on the list currently, those are the guys that you expect at least 8 strikeouts every game at this point, and just to be productive for you. And if they don't do well, it's an absolute shock. So the only thing really that they don't have going for them, as opposed to like Wheeler, Glasnow, Scooble, Sale, is really the track record of it. And I will also mention pitching for the White Sox and Pirates respectively, not the most ideal.
Sure.
But it's certainly not been the big impedance as we might have thought it would have been. So they're just absolutely dope. You put them in your lineup, they're the locked in tier one starters.
I did want to ask you about that. I know this is list adjacent and not really pertaining to the list itself, since you don't rank based on like crystal ball projecting rest of season. However, people do like to hear your thoughts on pitching. And I'm curious, when you think about a pitcher like Crochet, who is all but assuredly being moved at the deadline, the White Sox have said they're going to trade him. Does that factor into your analysis at all as a fantasy player? Or are you just like, I just care about pitchers being good, and I just am looking at like, what are they doing that is good? And that's my only real focus.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is all with a fantasy lens, because it's all about drafting for a fantasy team. And how I craft it is not just see these are the top 100 pitchers in baseball, right? It's all about that. And when you mention the trade deadline, there's a lot of things that we can do as far as, oh, he's going to go to a contender, thus the wins are going to be better, it's going to be X, Y, and Z. There have been many times that teams that go for something are not the most winning team after they go for something. Mm-hmm. Also, considering that Crochet isn't just a pure rental for half a year, maybe there's a team that isn't as competitive as, say, like the Orioles or the Yankees that do go after Crochet as well, thinking more about next year. And I generally don't like to make assumptions for the future based on what's going on at the moment.
Yeah.
So when we talk about, we talk about innings limits, we talk about when this guy returns, how is he going to factor into it? What is they going to look like in September for your head-to-head playoffs? Let's look at the schedule that they're going to face. Who knows? A lot of those things I don't take into account, because it's just impossible to do that. Sure, if you want, you can say, yes, he's going to be on a more winning team, thus the 33% win chance that he has now at 6 over 18 turns into a 40 or 45%. Maybe that's one extra win that you get, two. Like, maybe it's more than that, but it's that really shouldn't factor in, honestly, that much into these ranks, especially when you're at the top of this. It's really just about, like, do I believe that this guy's going to go out there and be dope with ratios and strikeouts? And, like, generally, the wins will just come regardless of that.
And that's a little bit like what we talked about in the offseason, in terms of, instead of projecting, like, how many good innings am I going to get? What's going to happen? Will this guy get hurt? It's like, take the pitchers that you know are going to pitch well when they're out there. And I just think that's really interesting to hear and to talk about, considering three of the top 5 guys that you have with Glasnow, Sale, Crochet are coming up in a lot of conversations recently around how long can Glasnow and Sale do this? They haven't done this that long. Are they going to get hurt? Should you trade them? Because they're not going to get the play. Crochet has an innings limit. Crochet might get traded. And at the end of the day, it's like, you could make moves based off that and expect that something is going to happen to depress their value, but that would be totally hypothetical, and we have no way of knowing if that's actually going to be the case or not.
Exactly. Also, the thing about like innings limits and if they're going to get hurt and stuff, I think we learned a very valuable lesson this year about, hey, I was a low man on Tyler Glasnow. I was like, no, we have all these question marks, but here's a guy that we are like super high on injury risk and we have to avoid this. And here he is at number 2 for me right now, because all these other guys got hurt.
Right.
And we can't, just because we, okay, so hey, innings limit, so he clearly is going to be missing at this point. you know, everyone is going to go through something. And I'm on, and most likely, and maybe he doesn't even get that limit. I don't know. It's going to be weird. And I've just kind of thrown it all to the out the window at this point because we just don't know.
I think it's the right way to go about it. I'd rather take the production now. And if I lose it in a month, I'll figure it out in a month rather than assume I'm going to lose it when I don't know for sure.
Right.
And some guys from this next tier could emerge and fill some of that spot. And those are guys at tier number two. It starts with number 10, Joe Ryan. Number 11, Aaron Noah. Number 12, Luis Castillo. Number 13, Garrett Cole. Number 14, Sonny Gray. Number 15, Grayson Rodriguez. Number 16, George Kirby. Number 17, Logan Gilbert. Number 18, Shota Imanaga. And number 19, Tanner Houck. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
I mean, look, there's been one show that is just so absurdly referenced and so obviously present in the zeitgeist of America that, yes, you know, has declined over time. And I think that's what we kind of expect for a lot of tier two, is that we know that this is successful. We know it has track records, should be really good. But also, hey, it might not be exactly in its prime still, and it's still entertaining. But really, oh man, was this the show? And that's, of course, is The Simpsons. It's got to be that. And that's tier two. And actually, by the way, I actually have a new way of thinking about this. I'm curious what you think. I think when we go after pitchers, it's essentially we'd be happy with 75% of the ideal. And if you have that frame of reference, I know it sounds really strange to say it, but I think there's a lot of focus on filling up the 100%, right, the cup all the way to every ounce of potential value a player can get. And that's the only outcome that we like. And that is, if I don't have this starting pitcher that is at 100% potential at this thing, then I lose, or it's not good. Oh, he has a bad start, you know, then like he's not his 100% or whatever it is. And I think if you imagine a lot of these guys being like, look, if you get 75% of that incredible, absurd Cy Young season that we talk about for ages, that this guy was SP1 or whatever, 75% is like the goal. So Glasnow, yes, that's 75% of that. Crochet, that would be 75%. Chris Sale, 75% of that, right? And Burns isn't the 100%. Strikeout rate is underneath what we expected, right, and all that. But we're happy with it because he's above that 75%, right? And I think that's the important. I'm going to see if I can really figure this out of like, yeah, what is the 100% of the ideal ace? Then how much percent is everybody else of that? You know? Right. It's just kind of a way that I think about it a bit of, instead of trying to think of like the ultimate thing, be like, look, this is the baseline of like what we like to have as a fantasy manager, whether they go 6 innings and 1 earned run and 7 base runners versus 6 innings, 1 earned run and 6 base runners is really like on a given night, not a big deal. Sure. You're 1 whip versus a 1.7 over the full season, but it's just, it really in these small samples, it's not. So just you're thinking of that bar is important.
Yeah, you're talking about almost like you're talking about the concept of like relative like security. And what's interesting is that you're mentioning a situation where like coming into the season, I think we thought, okay, who are the guys that are safe? Well, it's Logan Webb. It's Zach Gallen. It's the guys who the ceiling might not be as high, but the floor feels a little bit higher. So they felt quote unquote safer. But if you look at some of the guys in this list and what you're addressing, it might not be a guy where the ceiling is a little bit lower, like Logan Webb. It's that the ceiling is high, but that you feel safe. You feel better about like, if I hit that 75% of what this guy is, I'm still going to be like, I'm not going to go, I'm not going to go below a level that makes me feel comfortable. Right. Like I know if I'm drafting George Kirby, right, who I think now has, you know, he was ahead of those guys in most rankings. But like if George Kirby doesn't hit the 100% of what I think I'm going to get from him, I'm still going to get something that's pretty good. Right. Yeah. And we're seeing guys in tier three creeping back into that discussion, like the Freddie Peraltas and the Pablo Lopez's, where like there may be more volatile, there may be more variance. But at the end of the day, even their like season may come out to being 75% of that stretch, and I'd be really happy with it. So I get that. I do want to talk about the big name in this tier though, which is Garrett Cole. down 9 spots. You had moved. He started out in, I think, like tier 3 or 4 for you.
He was trying to see. I think he was right there, essentially. Like and he then, was around 13 or so. Yeah. And then
he moved up into 1 and then down. Now, the velocity dip he mentioned was intentional, or he claimed after the second start, it was intentional to try, he didn't want to be throwing 97 all game. He did ramp up the velocity a little bit in the last game. Is the movement down 9 spots just feeling like there might be a little more volatility than you're comfortable with in an ace tier?
You actually reminded me something before we jump into the whole Garrett Cole thing is I did have some worry about Cole Reagans after the last start because he had a 91 and 92 mile per hour fastball in the last inning, and then he climbed it back to 94, 95. And I asked him about it, and he said, oh yeah, that was, I looked at tape after, and I noticed that mechanically my timing was off, and essentially it was his arm getting out too quickly, which meant that he didn't have everything behind it in those, and he's working on a bullpen to fix them. It's not like an injury thing. Mm-hmm. And that is so absurdly comforting. And I believe that. I've certainly felt that before where it's like the worst thing ever. You feel like you're essentially pitching uphill. And it's really bad. You're not behind. You're not like out and leading the ball. You're out behind the ball, and it just feels terrible. So that at least calmed my worries about the velocity drop that we saw there. And Garrett Cole saying like, yeah, it's an intentional thing or it's whatever. Honestly, I think the Yankees would protect him a ton. And I'm not really worried about it. Like this stuff does happen, right? Those little blips. It's only really terrifying if it's a consistent decline, or like a massive drop off. And then it's like, uh-oh. So with Cole, the minus 9 spots are more about something I said after the second outing, which was against the Mets. He got completely trounced, right? 0 strikeouts for the first time since 2016. It was bad. And I realized, oh no, I assumed too much. This is something that I'm starting to do now is saying, look, you don't get aces going to ace until 3 starts minimum. That's that. You just can't. I'm sorry. I know how good we feel. And I know, and like, I gave Paul Skeens it after 3, essentially, or something like that. And I, jump back up Max Fried and Garrett Cole, whatever. But here's Zach Gallen, 22 right now. I'm like, you look great in that first one. We'll talk about it in a second, but you're going to have to wait 3. So with Garrett Cole, I feel like, okay, I need to do that. Garrett Cole does have a little bit more of a badge than the other ones. And the third start was better. It wasn't fully Garrett Cole, but if this is the Garrett Cole that we get, that's a tier 2 ace. Fine. He's going to be fine in my view, as long as he's healthy. And that's a huge thing. Like we've seen guys return who have not been healthy, even though they said that they would be. So I want to throw it all to the wind. I want to be like injury, whatever. Yeah. And I think once Garrett Cole shows up and is like, yo, my slider is really good now. My fastball is killing it upstairs again. Then I go, okay, fine. Welcome back.
I think it's the fact that there was like some nerve issue related to the injury that he had when he was recovering from it that makes me not concerned in the fact that I don't think he's going to be good, but that there might be some starts that are not ideal because anytime you're dealing with a nerve issue and you're throwing arm, there's grip issues and components connected to that. And there may be just be some weird starts, right? And or at least for in the immediate. And like to your point, you're going to put Cole in your lineup and yes, I don't think his weird starts are going to be like the Mets start. I don't. I think they might be like, hey, I was only able to go 5 innings. I walked 3. I gave up 2 runs. And you're not like, you're not hurt by it, but you're not like, oh, that was my ace. That's kind of where I'm at, where like you're not getting, hey, is this the top pitcher in fantasy baseball? But I don't think you're getting anything that would be worrying or upsetting to you.
Sure.
You put me on to Imanaga's fastball decline that he was going through in the last few starts. It looks like from the brilliant Fab Four.
Fantastic app, Four.
Fantastic Four. Well, listen, it says Fan Four. I said Fab. I'm a Michigan Bob Beatles fan at heart, so it's a Fab 5 thing in my head. But
yeah, it's something the SB Fab Forecast, okay?
Yeah. The Fan Four. I'm looking at a much better IVB in his last start. I'm looking at a height-adjusted VAA of 1.6, which is getting better. Velo is up to 93. So it feels like maybe the fastball is trending back in the right direction, which should be comforting to people with Imanaga on their teams.
Yeah, I mean, I feel as if Imanaga is not the guy that allowed 10 runs to the Mets. And
the Mets, man, they're just doing it to everybody.
You know, someone's going to completely take them down. We're going to call them the Grim Ace. And I can't wait for that.
Ooh.
but no, Imanaga to me is not just completely in free fall, right? This is what I talk about all the time, is that you have guys that excel and then they have their moment of adversity. Mm-hmm. And many more times than not, they come out of it much better. So I'm excited to see that for Shota Imanaga. I imagine at the very least, it's going to come back up to a place that is still an ace. But I'm not ready to just completely jump off it. I do recognize that both him and Hauk, that is Imanaga and Hauk, are both like, hey, look, we need to defend our aces, going to ace tags now. We're in that danger zone. But I don't think they are going to lose it quite yet.
Yeah, I agree. There are some potential looming aces in tier three, but we'll get to those after the break. So tier three starts with number 20, Jack Flaherty. Number 21, Justin Steele. Number 22, Zach Gallen. Number 23, Pablo Lopez. And number 24, Freddie Peralta. What is this tier called? And why is it called?
Well, that? Eric, we have three who are former aces, mm-hmm, over two hoping to be aces. That would make a full house.
Great. Also a great show.
Yeah, wonderful show. I used to watch that one all the time right before Blossom.
Jesse and the Rippers. Great band, Jesse and the Rippers. Underrated band.
Oh, man. Oh, my gosh. My introduction to Bob Saget. I cannot believe it.
Yes. And I do love that he wound up not being at all like the character he played on the show. Just tremendous.
Well, right. That's exactly it.
Amazing.
It's just like how Thomas the Tank Engine is how I knew George Carlin and Ringo Starr.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. I love that, how that works. Comedians, man, they really do have a lot of versatility.
Absolutely.
Not many of these guys are changed in your rankings. Gallen re-entered after the injury. He came off the IL. Anything you feel like you need to say about these five that you haven't had a chance to kind of get off your chest in the last week?
Oh, man. So first of all, Zach Gallen, yeah. Came back. He was averaging like 92, 93 earlier in the year. 95 on the fastball when he returned. And beautiful curveballs. And changeups for strikes and sliders for strikes. This was the best version I've ever seen of Zach Gallen. Oh my gosh, I want this every single time. That's dope. It's just one start, but thank you for doing everything I've ever wanted. Oh, and also Freddie Peralta did the same thing. Four seamers upstairs, changeups for strikes, sliders for strikes. This is the best version of him. So good. And Jack Flaherty. Oh man, why'd you have to throw those fastballs that get hit and a bad slider? Like, his slider and curve were still really good, down and low, and blah, 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 blah. So he's fine. He should still be getting aces, gonna ace in a week or two. Justin Steele is good. His slider isn't acting like an ace slider, mm-hmm, right now, which I think is why he's not really, I don't know, comfortably getting that tag. And then there's Pablo Lopez, who had two great starts against two bad offenses. But the skills were much better. The changeup against the Mariners was great, and it set up the four-seamer well. And then against the Athletics, he had his sweeper, and it was amazing. Actually, get those back, reverse those. It was Oakland first, I believe, then the Mariners. And I actually asked him about the sweeper, because we haven't seen that really all year, what changed. He was pretty much just saying that, like, he finally just let it rip. That is, a lot of times as a pitcher, you can overthink as you throw a breaking ball. And can think, okay, cool, here are the seams. I need to get my wrist just like this and like that. And this one, Pablo was just like, all right, man, boom, I'm just going to go as hard as I can on this thing and, like, you know, really unleash it. And it worked out super, super well. So I love hearing that, because it's showcasing to me, like, yes, Pablo isn't just, oh, cool, I got lucky with this one against a bad team or something. No, that sweeper was the sweeper from last year. Right. No, the changeup before is a much better feel than it was before. Right. He and I exchanged the release point changes on his changeups, showing that he was getting more on the side of it. He changed that in the Athletics game, got more on top of it, much better changeup. Right. So I'm inclined to believe that Lopez is getting better. Mm-hmm. I also recognize I do have some bias of this, and that two weak opponents, we haven't really seen the full encompassing start as much. So he has a challenge this week. Looking forward to that one. I believe it's against Houston. And that to me will be a lot more telling, I think, for how Pablo navigates that outing. I have a good, good feeling about it, But he still kind of waits to be seen that Pablo really is the man he's supposed to be.
Yeah. And listen, sometimes it takes starts against bad offenses to just kind of like jumpstart the confidence, the feel for the Absolutely. Pitches, all that kind of stuff. It shouldn't be like fully written off, especially when you have a person with a track record of success, right? We're not talking about a rookie who comes up in his debut and faces, you know, the Tigers and dominates them. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, is this guy legit? Like,
right.
You're talking about a guy who maybe just needed a few, you know, they say in basketball, sometimes you just need to see the ball go through the hoop.
Yeah.
And then it like opens up the rest of the game for you. And I think Absolutely. That sometimes it's that way for pitchers. You just need to have a game where things go well. And then you can kind of start getting into your groove a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, even, you know, after the game previously, it was just like, look, man, you got nothing to lose now. Go out there and just like have fun and like don't think about the other guys at all. Just like, just do what you want to do. And whatever happens, happens, you know, throw everything out the window, just throw 20 million changeups, whatever you want. And he clearly did that and worked. So I'm excited for Pablo.
Good. I hope he gets back on track. Also, but not a lot of movement at the top of tier number four, but there is some movement toward the back half of it. And that tier starts with number 25, Reynaldo Lopez, number 26, Ronald Blanco, number 27, Logan Webb, number 28, Bailey Ober, number 29, Seth Lugo, number 30, Ranger Suarez, and number 31, Michael King. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
So Eric, this is the, you know, this is the Holly tier, right? These are the ones that are just kind of always there. And you don't really need to think about the context of everything else that's just kind of going on, right? You're just like, oh no, it's Logan Webb, whatever. I'm just going to do this. And I think that would be perfect for a show like Seinfeld, because Seinfeld did not really have that connected story at all. You just put on Seinfeld and it's got the one, you know, with the jacket or whatever, right? Like it doesn't matter. It's just that one. So, this is the Seinfeld tier.
But some of those episodes do pop and are like some of the best things you've watched. And
absolutely.
We get some of those starts with guys like Michael King, who has really come on a while.
Oh, I love Michael King.
We talked about how he struggled at the start of the year. He was tremendous in June. A lot of people picked up on the fact that he's throwing the sinker more inside to righties. Like there's some pitch mix changes, location changes. Again, first full season as a starter, need to game plan differently, needed to like approach things a little bit differently. And it seems like he's settled into a little bit of a groove. And that's not to say there won't be bumps up ahead. But I feel like if you dropped King or if you jumped off the bandwagon early on, you're kicking yourself a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Someone dropped him in my league. I think after the Philly start, where he allowed 6 earned runs. And yes, it was so great. I'm so happy. It's so wonderful. He has 32 strikeouts in his last 4 starts combined. Mm-hmm. He had a weird inning against the Brewers. So it was 5 earned runs in 6 innings. But outside of that game, that one weird inning, the other 6 games have tallied 6 total earned runs. He's in a groove, guys. And he locates well east-west. Sweeper's working, changeup's working, sinker's working, as you mentioned. It's there. You love to see it.
Yeah, you do. Ranger Suarez down 15 spots though here. Is this just kind of, we're a little bit starting to see what we thought we might have been seeing, or we thought we might eventually see?
It's the curse. It's the curse of the list. Okay. I finally started to appreciate Ranger Suarez, and I think I got burned by it essentially after Baltimore and then even against the Padres and then Tigers and Miami. And I watched these and I just didn't really see like, you know, a dominant ace. I saw a good Holly, like someone who's just, look, I can go inside and out with changeups and fastballs and here's some curves and cutters. And to see 0 strikeouts across 91 pitches against the Marlins is really something. Like, I even want to emphasize this. I've seen low strikeout games from guys when they are getting outs, when they're cruising through 6 or so. But to see 4.2 innings of 6 earned runs and 9 hits and 0 strikeouts is a completely different story. And watching it, it just felt like he didn't have anything that was fooling them. That didn't have any, he wasn't able to get the changeup working at all. He wasn't able to get lefties out effectively. Like, he had this great at bat with Jazz Chisholm, who just eventually worked to get the fastball he wanted and get a base knock up the middle. And it's just, yeah, that's not, he's not an ace. Like I watched it, I was like, yeah, what, this is the Ranger Suarez that we kind of expected right. into the season as kind of like a Toby. And maybe it's just a temporary thing. I don't have him in Toby land, right? I don't have him in the 60s or so. I don't have him as like, yeah, you're going to start Ranger Suarez, but you're not really going to be like fist your pump, pump your fist about it. Fist your pump. Oh my gosh. Okay.
It's a car thing, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, maybe he settles to be like in the 40s, actually, where I had him during his early run or so. I was like, yeah, but that's like, he's just that kind of guy. I still have him at what, 30 or so. And that's still like, yes, Ranger Suarez. Yeah, exactly. At 30. You're still very good. Like you're in between Seth Lugo and Michael King. I'm not saying that you're not beneficial to teams, but I really implore everybody to not look at ERA and WHIP at this point. Just say, okay, that's how they have been. How have they been earning that? And okay, is that believable or not? I think it was a point with me when I pushed him to ace that, yes, he was earning these strikeouts as well, that he just looks so in his groove. I was like, fine, yeah, you're getting all the things that you want. But what I've seen lately is not really that. And yeah, I just don't trust that he's going to be a sub three ERA guy moving forward.
Right. We kind of thought that this would be who he was at the end of the day. And you're still happy to have him on your roster and you're still happy to have him in your lineup. And you're just happy you're not going to Nick for car stuff. This is like, you're never. Just a true New Yorker, never had a yep. car, doesn't drive. Just, oh, you got to go in there and you got to fist the pump. That's not how cars work. But it's great. You and I, we take the subway. It makes it easy. We'll go to chair number five. Starts number 32, Tanner Bibee. Number 33, Dylan Cease. Number 34, Jared Jones. Number 35, Taj Bradley. Number 36, Ryan Pepio. Number 37, Luis Gil. Number 38, Mackenzie Gore. And number 39, Bobby Miller. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
Oh, man, I was going to go with something else, but I'll save that one for later. This one is going to be, let's do... Yeah, this is going to be South Park because that was in the 90s, wasn't quite there yet. It mm-hmm. just started. We saw the potential. We knew that this could work out and be something really important, but it didn't really hit its stride, I think, until the 2000s. And, you know, maybe at some point, these guys could really be that overwhelming ace.
Yeah, there's a few names in here that I'm a little worried about. I guess the two names that are causing the most worry for people recently are Bobby Miller and Luis Gil. Do you have any legitimate worry, or is it just like, as you mentioned with Imanaga above, like more of a bump in the road sort of thing? I mean, I think yeah. after the last few starts, it's fair to at least question how healthy Bobby Miller is, how much of himself we're getting.
Well, I mean, I can rant a long time about the Dodgers. I certainly have on the craft with Eno, but watching Bobby Miller, it's not a question of stuff. Like he still makes these pitches move. He comes in at 98 miles per hour with a lead extension, and doesn't matter that he has average IVB. Doesn't matter that he has average height adjusted VA. Like they don't harm it, and he just throws so hard. So who cares? No, it's approach there, and I have to just wonder, like, what is your plan exactly? Is it four seamers used in the way that they should be? Is it sliders used well? Is it sinkers a ton? Is it? I can't make it out, and that's got to be fixed at some point. That like that's an easier thing to tweak than oh no, I can't make these things move at all. Oh no, I can't throw any strikes. Like you can throw strikes, you can make things move. You just don't really know. It feels like a random number generator of generally what you're trying to do, which doesn't make any sense to me. So I think over time this does get fixed. It didn't feel like injury to me for mm-hmm. Bobby Miller. It could just be shaking off rust. Now it's a case where you might want to wait until you see it. This is such a heavy, obvious stash in that way. I mean, sure, do that. If you want to wait past the Arizona Diamondbacks start, fine. I kind of want to just do it anyway because it's just super fun. And as for Luis Gil, honestly, it's just one bad game. But Nick, the Orioles. Yeah, I know. I watched it. The Orioles had a game plan. They went out and I call it bamboozling, which is when a guy doesn't perform poorly, but the other team just has that guy's number that night. And that's what healed. What? I mean, it was four seamers that were not bad. They were competitive, and the Orioles just attacked. They were exposed on the changeups. He threw over 24 whiffs in that game on the changeup, but they just took advantage of every single pitch that they could in that one, which is so atypical for Heel. But then the Mets game, he actually pitched poorly. There was a rain delay in that one later on, and I don't know if there was, if it was drizzling or if it was a slick ball or something like that for that reason. Probably not, but it was a scatter shot of four seamers more than we normally see. The slider and the changeup were higher than they usually are. That was the bad command game from Luis Heel. But that really is it to me. It's just that one game, honestly. I know I'm just going to point to the Orioles one, but really, I just feel like that was the Orioles being like, you beat us before on this. We are just, I don't care. We're going to cheat all we want on this, and you better do something about it, you know? And props to them for that. So I'm not worried as much about Heel.
And we'll come back to that because it dovetails a little bit with another Yankee lower on the list and what the Yankees pitching coach, Matt Blake, was talking about, which fits with that Luis Heel Orioles start. But we got to talk about the big move for Taj Bradley up 14 spots. Was really good again. It reminds me a little bit of when I think you moved Taj Bradley like 11 spots up after the Cubs start and mentioned we've kind of seen him do this. Is he going to be consistent with the game plan that at that game was fastballs up and splitters down? And then his start afterwards, which was against Minnesota. Sorry. He did not. In the Seattle start after that, he walked four. The command was a little bit iffy, but 11 strikeouts against the Nationals feels like maybe are we seeing anything more consistent, or is this still like, I'm going to rank him high because the upside is there, but I still don't know that he knows who he is or can be.
Well, I actually do think that he's learning that, I can be a four-seamer splitter guy. I did see that with the Nationals game, 70% strikes on both the four-seamer and the splitter. Even in the Seattle one, he actually did lean more into a four-seamer splitter with just 15% cutters, which I do like. The cutters were also like a 31% strike rate. But even there, he had 8 strikeouts, had 7 splitter whiffs, and we did see better separation with four-seamers actually upstairs in the Nationals game with that splitter more so down. And the cutter honestly helping out at 22% usage. With 4 whiffs of its own, 55% strike rate. Like, it was still a good offering as a worse third pitch, right?
Right.
And I'm believing more that just like, I think Taj Bradley's recognizing that that is his path to greatness at the moment. I mean, the four-seamer is at a 71% strike rate. We want to see that. We want to see him get a ton of strikes on that pitch. Yes, there's ICR rates up the wazoo of 51%. Fine, but that's when contact is made, and a 14% swing strike rate, that's okay with us. And then the splitter just wasn't a thing last year. It was a changeup. It was the classification, but the splitter is now at a 66% strike rate. I'm digging it. 18% swing strike rate, 34% ICR. That's good enough for me. And the fact that he has a 32% K rate is crazy. Absolutely nuts. I have to get behind that a bit more. The Hipper 9 is down from 9 to 6.8, and the BABIP is so ridiculous to me. I don't know. It feels like this is more real than I was giving credit before. It's a 15% swing strike rate right now instead of the 12 to 13% Bradley had in 2023. This is an approach I feel like is working out well, and I recognize that anyone who has Taj Bradley, you like this guy. You like him a lot. So I felt he deserved this big jump into tier 5.
I did appreciate your point that, like, for the most part, right? For the most part, the splitter, like, is still getting a decent number of strikes, even if he's not filling the zone up with it. And so I think that, like, it's a pitch that almost seems okay. To be like, it's a good choice for him as somebody without precise command.
Yeah,
to be leaning on it a lot because it has a little bit of margin of error in and of itself. Sure. So he may not be able to locate it precisely, but if he locates it near the strike zone, it's more often than not going to get swings or do what he needs it to do. Whereas a pitch like a cutter, or like, you know, his old changeup that he was throwing last year, like those pitches need more precise location. They need more precise command in order to get the benefit that you're seeking from them.
Right.
So it makes sense. I like it. I still, I don't know how refined the command is, I guess you could say, but I think obviously this is a step in the right direction. And then we need to end this tier by talking about the top of this tier, which is the cover boy himself, Tanner Bibee.
Yeah, Tanner Bibee is throwing curveballs and it's great. I needed this so much. I've been complaining a lot about Tanner Bibee just not really having what he needs, because it was a four-seamer that he was throwing at the top of the zone that I just felt was, he's just doing too much with that. And I think that it's steepness and it just doesn't get swing strikes. He's actually doing really well locating upstairs, but he just didn't have enough of a compliment from his two pitches, his changeup and slider, which I don't really think he commands that well, but he'd been getting by with them. It was like, okay, but it feels weird. And if you look back at the beginning of the season, he was throwing four seamers at times, like 56% of the time, 52%, 50%. And the last four games has been actually 5, 37, 38. And really the last three I want to mention of 42, 46, and 35. Why? Because he started throwing curveballs. And when he first came up, his MLB debut, Tanner Bibee, I was like, whoa, hold on a second. This is a guy with a four pitch mix. I thought this would be like a fastball slider guy. No, there's a four seamer and a slider and a changeup and a curve. This is really cool. Like, see how this all works. And then as the season went on, it became just four seamers and sliders and changeups. The curveball just kind of went away. And that's where I've had this trepidation with Bibee, because I never really felt he had the actual full package working. Like, the slider and changeup sometimes would be commanded well, sometimes not. He would often leave the bottom of the zone just kind of empty. And this four-seamer is not this, hey, do something with my four-seamer, I dare you, kind of pitch. So he was reliant on the secondaries, and those secondaries not always being this well-commanded thing just kind of felt weird to me. But now we have curveballs at 22% usage and 28% and 32% in the last three outings, and it's changing everything for him. 78% strike rate across 28 thrown in his last one. 67% strike rate against Baltimore, where he absolutely survived. Like, last three games are three earned runs with 22 strikeouts, including just only three against the Royals. And yeah, because the curveball was there to help. Like, imagine if he didn't have that curveball against the Royals. That would have been a really bad game. And like, this is the extra piece that I've been waiting for from Bibee for a while to really believe into it. So I love this. Obviously, it's not just like set in stone. He has his curveball forever. It's been three starts of it, but it certainly looks like he's doing that. And I'm pushing him up here because, I mean, he's had a ridiculous season now and really saved it after looking pretty bad for a while. I mean, since May 13th, you know, he was surviving with those things. I was pushing him up a little bit more before the curveball got introduced. But really, since May 13th, Tanner Bibee in nine starts, 2.38 ERA, 0.89 whip, and a 31% K rate. Oh my gosh, 34% ICR, like deservedly getting that BABIP of just 254. Really, really good.
And I know there's a lot of people that look at what he did last year and then are like, obviously this is what he was always going to do. There was just a blip at the start of the season and he, you know, he was always going to figure it out. I think that is glossing over the legitimate changes that he has made in the middle of this season, including what you're talking about with the fastball, what we talked about a few weeks ago with the changes he was making to the curveball, what we were talking about with the fastball weeks ago in terms of he was making, like, he is modifying, he is making changes, he is developing that has led to success this year. I understand he had success last year. And so it might be easy to just say, well, this was always going to be him. That would take away from the actual work that went into adjusting and changing what happened now, because last year you could look at the underlying stats and say, like, this was a little lucky. It was a little fortunate, but he's earning the vast majority of what he's doing right now. And it's because of a lot of those changes. And I think if you have Bibee on your team, you feel a lot better about the legitimacy of what's going on rather than last year. There was some like, oh, he's getting a little lucky.
Absolutely. I mean, to me, this is so much more comfortable. And there's certainly been times when, like, I go after guys, I'm like, I don't know if I really like this, but it's working. And I'm sure I'm missing something about why it's as effective or consistent, but I feel it's very precarious. And honestly, I mean, it wasn't working in the beginning of the year. I mean, Bibee went back and forth, wasn't really having the good strikeout rate, was not having a good year. I mean, none of that stuff that you wanted. And everyone was kind of regretting having Bibee at first. This is through his first, no, I had the wrong dates there. This is for the first, I'm using, of course, the pitcherless player page, by the way, the first eight games, there was a 4.91 ERA and 1.36 whip and a 25% K rate, right? 7.5% walk rate. ICR was 43%. That's what you were dealing with then. And it was, yeah, this pitch mix is not good. This is the curveball only 7% usage. All of a sudden, changes, of course, with that arm angle that we talked about before, and of course, the introduction of the curveball, I think is really legitimizing what he's doing.
Yeah, I agree. We have more than half the list to talk about, or we're going to do that after this break. Tier number six starts at number 40, Christopher Sanchez, number 41, Cutter Crawford, number 42, Gavin Stone, number 43, Nathan Eovaldi, number 44, Max Scherzer, number 45, Jake Irvin, number 46, Zach Eflin, number 47, Reese Olson. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
Look, I never really watched this show, but this is your other holly tier, and this is really like the guys that are not quite as exciting as tier four. Like, oh man, no, I really, really dig these. Maybe they'll become ace potentials like Michael King or so, but you know you're not going to drop them. You know you're going to be fine with them. You know they're going to be there for you. That would be friends, of course, because I'll be there for you, Eric.
I appreciate that. That does mean a lot. which of these pitchers would you most appreciate being there for you? I feel like we've been in on Reese Olson for much of the year, and he's ticking back up, and I think that makes us feel good.
It certainly does. Zach Eflin also, you draft him maybe as an ace. I brought him down last week. I was like, look, he's just kind of a Toby now. He actually starting to look more like that kind of guy. Don't get crazy about it, but yeah, Cutter and Curveball are looking great. Jake Irvin has been there for you. I mean, what a ridiculous run this has been, and I almost put him over Max Scherzer, believe it or not, but it's been that good, especially with the curveball coming back after missing it for a start. But Christopher Sanchez, I mean, just did a complete game shutout, 16 straight innings of scoreless baseball with zero walks as well. Oh boy. Christopher Sanchez, thank you so much for having such a glorious changeup.
Glorious. Beautiful. And I'm sure it was lovely to see in person as well. Oh, yeah. Gavin Stone, still here, sticking around the Dodger rotation.
Yep.
Some big names to talk about in tier number seven. Starts at number 48, Kevin Gausman. Number 49, Carlos Rodon. Number 50, Framber Valdez. Number 51, Yusei Kikuchi. Number 52, Hunter Green. Number 53, Hunter Brown. You just love putting those two back to back. It happens all the time. Number 54, Bryce Miller. Number 55, Gavin Williams. Number 56, Nick Pivetta. Number 57, coming back from the minors, most likely, Christian Scott. What's his tier called? Why is it called that?
This is going to be Ren and Stimpy. Because it's an explosive tier. When you watch an episode of Ren and Stimpy, you don't know what you're going to get. You just don't. Okay? Is it going to be chaos? Is it going to be a lot of stuff? Is it going to be just maybe a little bit more toned down or something? You don't know. Probably not the toned down stuff. That's what this is. But you feel like you're going to enjoy it. Mm-hmm.
I did love Ren and Stimpy. I didn't watch it all the time. But I did really enjoy it. It was so weird. This show's in the 90s.
Oh, man. My God.
So weird. So Carlos Rodon was the name that I was teasing a little bit earlier. I was covering our blurbs for RotoWorld today, and I noticed there was a great article in The Athletic. It was an interview with Matt Blake, who's the pitching coach of the Yankees, and his direct quote about Rodon, who was allowed 20 earned runs and a 1.253 OPS in his last three outings, was, "I think it's being ready to adapt your game plan early because it's clear that teams can hit the fastball and are targeting him early. There are more guys like him who throw the ball hard with good profiles, and there's just less room for error with that stuff. Even if that's how you got paid, that's not necessarily your map for success down the road. The more we can adjust and adapt to the league, and the sooner we can do that, the easier it is. You're not asking him to be crafty, but you've got to have a better rhythm than that." And so the idea of Rodon needing to shift his approach because teams are targeting that fastball and trying to jump on that, and that velocity just doesn't carry anymore in the way that it maybe used to. And whether he can actually shift whether he can actually do that, not that he's not good enough to shift his philosophy and shift his approach, but we've talked about the fact that this isn't a guy with a deep pitch mix, right? He has the slider, and then he throws a changeup 10%, he mixes in a cutter sometimes, a curveball sometimes. Like, there's not a lot of other stuff. So if you're saying, hey, you can't lead with the fastball, because guys are jumping all over this fastball, then he's got to make adjustments. And it could be mildly problematic. Like you saw the last start, he dropped the fastball usage like 7%, picked up the curve a little bit, picked up the changeup a little bit, but it wasn't a particularly compelling start. Like it doesn't give you the warm and fuzzies if you're saying Rodon with less fastball.
Right. It is weird because, you know, I know this isn't really what he's doing, but maybe Blake is just saying that stuff so that guys aren't going to be able to jump on it
also
next time.
Possible. Think also it's totally possible. Yeah.
Right. It is hard to say, hey, look, Carlos, you have to start with something else and get by with that. Because if you remember, he had the cutter earlier in the season, abandoned it. It just went back to fastball slider and it was great. And then recently he's tried to do more and they haven't had the success that we're looking for. And honestly, I think it's just comes down to really more command than anything. Watching those games, I didn't really feel like Rodon was comfortable with his entire arsenal. And Rodon will always be a mystery to me because watching those old games and looking at the numbers of how his fastball performed, we just kind of thought, like, I guess I was just like, look, the fastball is just so dominant upstairs, clearly, and the slider and everything. And it wasn't, or it was, and maybe they adapted to it. It doesn't quite add up like a lot of other guys do. So he's always been that little bit of an enigma for me. And at this point, I'm just saying, look, like you are weird and Eflin isn't weird.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have Eflin over you.
I get that. It is weird to see names like Kevin Gausman and Framber Valdez down here in tier seven.
I mean, let's be honest, though. Are they not cherry bombs?
No, they are. They are. And they were guys
exactly
that we were.
It, and it's just I gave them as much leeway as I could. Right. And now I'm just like, you guys, your fastballs get crushed. And when your secondaries are not good enough, this is what happens. And you haven't fixed them. Splitter had a sub 35% strike rate for Gausman in his last start. Sub 35%. That's absurd. It should be double that. Framber Valdez not getting 60% strikes on on curveballs and changeups. And yeah, so his sinker got hit. Like, get together. That's it.
That was the worry coming into the season, too.
Yeah, I mean, this is true. I mean, with Gausman and his splitter, though, it was still like a 22% swing strike rate last year. And like,
more that the fastballs were maybe.
The thing is, it always gets hit. It always does get hit. It's just about, okay, the splitter nullifies that, and we are willing to accept like a 118 whip or something, right? Right. As long as the ERA is low, because the splitter just nullifies a lot of the things and you get all the strikeouts and so on and so forth. But when the splitter goes, the most reliable splitter in baseball, right? Oh gosh, splitters! Why?
Yeah, and to be fair, when I said it was the worry at the start of the year, it was like, why? I mean, you and I both had like Gausman, I think around 10, 8, 9, 10, something like that. It was just like, why was he not fifth? Not like, nobody was saying.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, I saw people put it as third and stuff like that. We're like, we're not going to. I mean, we're not giving ourselves a pat on the back.
No.
So like, I would have taken Gausman though. I still thought he'd be amazing. You know, it doesn't matter.
I'm doing the opposite. I'm suggesting we never thought it would be this. We just when I said these were the concerns, it was like if you were trying to poke a hole in Framber Valdez or Kevin Gausman, there were things you had worries about. I don't think that you would have predicted that it would have exacerbated in this way, and maybe they'll right the ship and they'll wind up the end of the year somewhere between 20 and 30 and whatever.
Right. If we expect them to do exactly what they're doing, they're going to the next one at tier nine. I don't have them here, but I'm recognizing that, hey, look, there is a chance for these guys to actually be better. Once again, they could go in a month long stretch. We're just like, oh, cool. That's like four in runs. Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Gavin Williams back this week. Super excited to see what he looks like and just how healthy he is. And Christian Scott likely coming back for the Mets. Super great to see him back in the rotation. Will be nice to hopefully have him back for the rest of the year in the rotation.
Yep. And really the thing about those two guys is this is the end of the cliff here. And what I mean by the cliff is that in 12 teamers, there I think is such a wide range. We talk about the glob, but really I think the more important glob is the one after the real guys you need to hold on to in 12 teamers. And tier eight is the real moment of on a blurring the lines of where the cliff is. So that second glob is the one where it's like, is it really worthwhile for me to hold on to this guy, even though he has to go against the Dodgers this week and I'm not going to start him? And the answer is generally no past tier eight. So Thierry is like your, okay, fine, I'll go hold on to this. But they're not like, oh man, I'm going to lose my league because I don't have Jose Barrios anymore. You know, so
right.
I say, Christian Scott, you might as well take that chance for him as someone who could actually make a bigger impact, I think, overall for the season. Same with Gavin Williams as well. And that's why those guys are in tier seven. While some others are like, well, no one's going to drop this guy for that guy or something. I understand. And also, I don't know, like, do you really need Marcus Stroman that badly on your team?
Right. And one of these guys you just picked up off waivers this week, most likely. And that's in tier number eight, number 58, Chris Bassett, number 59, Nestor Cortes, number 60, Marcus Stroman, number 61, Jose Berrios, number 62, Mitch Keller, number 63, David Festa, and number 64, Brandon Fought. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
This one would be, I know it's going to sound wild. This is 60 minutes. So okay. It's always there. It just kind of after the things happen, it's just now it's 60 minutes and you're just like, it's there for you. It's better than nothing. I don't want the TV to be off, but like, I wish it were something else. You know, it's always after like the big event is now 60 minutes and you're just like, okay, fine.
I don't want it to be off. I like that. Just the comfort. Did you feel comforted by the debut of David Festa? Stat line itself was not great, but I like if you were just box score scouting, but I felt I kind of liked it. I mean, you know, what's funny is like I had read a lot about his slider and it wasn't until I started looking like watching video. I didn't realize that he had like a gyro slider. Like I thought that when you think about sliders that miss so many bats, I think we've been conditioned over recent years to like kind of in my head, I picture sweepers. I picture big, heavy breaking sliders that are going to really dart out of the zone. And his is not that, but I still think it's a really good pitch. The fastball was I think it was like around 96 and looked like it had decent shape. Like I think there's a solid enough foundation here.
No, I think Festa is pretty good. He cruised for three and then Ketel Marte once again just made his life terrible. No, his four seamer 16 to 17 inches of IVB, which is good. We'll take that. We have extension at 7 feet, which is great. We shouldn't expect the 96. You should probably expect 95. Always add an extra tick in MLB debuts. It's average VAA, but yeah, though that sounds great. And I think Festa just in general, he has intent to go upstairs, which I really do like as well. It wasn't all upstairs or a lot of them went down, but when he actually nailed the stuff upstairs, like that was what he was trying to do. And I think in debuts also one of the things that I don't like about them is that command is generally off. He did have a super high zone rate on that slider, 81% strike rate, which is cool. And 22% ICR as well, which I will take all day. And the changeup does have potential. He got on the side of it a good amount. But I do think the Festa is solid. I think it's a very good four-seamer matched with a slider. I think the changeup has been better in AAA. And honestly, if I ever had to make a three-pitch mix, it's that. It's a gyro slider with a four-seamer and a changeup. That's it. I don't want sweeper. I don't want a curveball. I want changeup, gyro slider, four-seamer. Mm-hmm. And I want the Luis Severino of old. You know, I want the Luis Heel style, right? I dig it. And he gets the Tigers this week. I think that David Festa is a step above the other prospect pitchers you might see this year. I mean, if Jacob Mizorowski comes up, fine. But, obviously Jackson Jobe. But really, I mean, I was talking about this with Eno. It's like, yeah, Festa and Jobe are the last remaining ones outside of Jared Jones and Paul Skeens. I mean, Christian Scott, too, is in there. I mean, yeah, those five, I guess, are like the five pitching prospects of this year. There might be someone else that surprises us later on, but Festa feels like someone that you definitely want to take a chance on.
Yeah, I agree. Cross my fingers he gets a little bit of time. I know that, you know, the Chris Paddock injury isn't really an injury. They said it's just fatigue, but they could be managing his innings, blah, 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 blah.
You never want to hear arm fatigue. That just doesn't sound right.
He like came out and said, just so people know, I'm not hurt. And it's like, okay, I guess we take players' words with a grain of salt anyway, and it's not like he's been stellar. I think Festa can keep his way pitching his way into this rotation. if he pitches well. We just have to touch on Brandon Pfaadt. I mean, up 27 spots. You have not been a huge believer in him at different points in the season, but it seems like maybe you're coming around a little bit.
Oh man, did you see it? Did you?
I didn't watch. I honestly didn't watch his last start. I'm not going to lie to you.
Did you catch what he did?
Did I catch what he did? I mean, I caught like the box score of what he did. Yes, but I.
So he threw 11 curveballs, and that curveball was good. That helped him out. To me, it's a huge deal that he has 21 pitches now in a start that are not four seamer, sinker, sweeper.
Oh yeah, he's been at like 4-1-4. Yeah.
And all of a sudden to see, hey, 13% curveball as opposed to under 5%. I'm a fan of that. I think it was a good pitch for him. I think it was a good addition where then he could cut back on the sweeper. It was just 21% usage in that one. Also, command generally was good. And I think the sinker is helping a little bit. Like, sinker command has been far better in the past couple weeks than before. Thing is, I do want to mention, you said with Pfaadt that he's up 27 spots. He's up to 64 like the end of the cliff.
But it's interesting that because you talked about the cliff, for a
he's
long
managed
time,
his you way have, to like kind yes. of climb out above it a little. And that's all it is. It's like, so really it is right now, tier 9, tier
he's
10, tier 11 are like,
right now.
Yeah, cliffhanger, exactly. And I had Festin Pfaadt saying like, look, you might as well chase this than settle for just whatever,
right?
That's kind of how I structure this. And the next three tiers are your others that are like, yeah, fine. I know some people are like, no, I got to just hold on to Eric Fede. I can't let go of him. You know, okay, fine. But then you're like, cool, my favorite streamers this week at tier 10. And then like the other streamers, tier 11. And that's how the list works. So Pfaadt and Festa just fought their way, no pun intended, above that bottom rank. I didn't intend it. Just what I thought was with his name. And I guess that's why I subconsciously said it. But yeah, Pfaadt is now finally getting some attention because I've been, again, waiting for that extra pitch that's not a sweeper and a fastball. So,
and an important pitch because that curveball is a pitch he can use. Curveballs in general, you can use against lefties. And we know those splits are a big issue for him.
Yes.
We'll get to the final pitchers on this list, but we will do that after this break.
So, Eric, I got to say, you took all three ad breaks. Okay. You did. All right. So, tier number 9, Matt Waldron, Eric Fede, Tyler Anderson, Cade Povich, Andrew Heaney, Andrew Abbott, Brady Singer, Michael Wacha, Kyle Gibson, and Tobias Myers. What is it called and why is it called that?
Oh, yeah. Wow. But now you're going into like, I hadn't even thought that I was going to do this.
I can only do this like on one podcast.
I know, seriously. Ever. And you're like, okay. Listen.
Yeah. What do you got?
I think there's a couple things. A lot of these names have been around for a while.
Sure.
We have had people talk about how enticing, how good some of these names are, how much they should be rostered, the upside, the potential upside of them. But I have to say, at the end of the day, I don't quite get it. I don't quite see it.
Uh-huh.
And even though maybe I'll watch it every now and then, I'm like kind of like. And so this is budget, huh? This is Frasier.
Oh, Frasier. Okay. Yeah. That's how I felt about Beavis and Butthead, at least when I was a kid. I was like,
Butthead skit on SNL like 3 weeks ago with Ryan Gosling was.
Oh, I got to see that. I mean, now I appreciate Beavis and Butthead, but back then I'm like, I don't get it.
You should watch that when you're done with this.
Frasier. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's the Frasier tier for me.
That's amazing. Is there someone in this tier for you that you feel like, yo, this guy should be given more love than you're giving him, Nick?
No. I mean, I'm a fan of Matt Waldron, but I understand the fickle nature of the knuckleball and what he's doing with the knuckleball.
And the thing is, I thought I was more in because the other things are fine. But then again, like, yeah, we just saw them not.
Right.
Right.
It was bad. I am expecting that Matt Waldron will go back to being somebody that I stream or feel iffy about at any moment. I read what you had written about Andrew Heaney. I went back and I watched the start. I did appreciate the change in shape and velocity on the slider. I feel like we've kind of seen that before, though, where like he will make a tweak and all of a sudden he's missing tons of bats and you're like, yeah. And you're like, oh, this is great. And then he kind of vanishes.
Exactly.
Brady Singer, I've been in on in the past a few times, but I don't know that there's anything happening here that is.
He's the same guy as he's been for 3 years, guys.
That makes me like feel much differently about him. So I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm coming around on Povich in the sense that like, I think Povich, I don't think there's a ton of upside, but I think because of his team context and the fact that he has legitimately five or six pitches that he'll use regularly and he pitches on a good team in a good home park and the command is pretty good, good enough. And I think that I like that he's in this tier with Waka because I kind of feel like there's similarity in that, like, I think there'll be more good than bad for you. And mm-hmm. I think that there'll be some stretches where you have three starts where you're really happy about, you know, having them on your team. And I don't think they'll ever kill you, but I don't think they're going to like really kind of be super exciting.
So how many swing strike rate pitches does Cade Povich have above 12%?
Honestly, I think it might be zero.
Yeah. So yeah, I knew you'd guess that. So it's one. It's a sweeper at 13%. Sweeper.
Right.
At 13.
Yeah. And the problem with the sweeper is he's a lefty.
So you can't really throw it against left-handers. Right. I think that's really the biggest pushback I have against Povich is just that you're not going to really overwhelm guys, I don't think. It's right. A four-seamer that I don't think is that great. He has amazing results right now. 17% ICR is bonkers to me. But otherwise, it's curveballs and cutters and sweepers. And is his command going to be that good? Because he's a rookie, and we generally don't really see that. But it is a winning ball club, and I'm fine. You know, he gets the Athletics this week. I'm like, yeah, cool. Go with Cade Povich. I recognize in this tier, this is not the streaming tier. This is the above one that I recognize people are going to be holding on to more than others. So Tyler Anderson, I still have on my teams. Like, he's been doing great with his changeup, even in the last start, even though he didn't do well. Like, his changeup's still good. Eric Fede has been a command guy with his kitchen sink. Like, I get it. And Michael Waka is on the up and up, but who knows if that's really going to stick as he goes back to Cleveland this week, stuff like that. And Tobias Myers has five straight starts of actually being productive now.
Funny. It's like why has he been so good? Like, I wrote about Tobias Myers in the Mixing It Up column that I did on June 26th. That was actually last week. And it was basically like, okay, what has happened? Well, he's going to the four seamer a lot more. And even though the four seamer is just 92, like, it has 6.7 feet of extension. It has 18.6 inches of IVB. It is a great shape pitch. And he's basically throwing it, like, we talked about this, I think, on the last show. He's like, he's throwing it down the middle. And why is he throwing it down the middle? Well, because he's also throwing his changeup more often, most recently. And he's throwing and not throwing the curve as much. And he's throwing this cutter. And he's throwing these pitches, basically, that look similar out of the hand. And he's throwing them basically all at the same location and just letting movement differentiate them enough that he's just missing the barrel of the bat.
Yeah.
So he's not getting tons of strikeouts, but he's like, okay, my curve has a more distinct shape than my cutter, than my changeup, than my fastball. So it's easier to pick up out of my hand. So if I just create my pitch mix around pitches that all kind of look similar out of my hand and I throw them at the same location, then it will be hard to really differentiate what I'm throwing until maybe it's too late to find the barrel. And it's like, cool, that's smart and good for you. He's getting the most out of what he's got, and it does work with that pitch mix. But it's like, it's not something that makes me think it is a sustainable change.
Yeah, it's so interesting because you have a sub 40% ICR in his main four pitches. Like, Tobias Myers, you are not allowing all of the hard contact, right? Mistake rates are really low, 4% on the four seamer, 5% on the cutter, 2% on the changeup. And actually, the slider is the only one with a mistake rate. That's 9.5%. But it's still, as you were mentioning, he's throwing this all over the plate. So he has high strike rates, high zone rates on these. And what's kind of crazy is that he has a 35% O-swing on this four-seamer because when he throws it upstairs, it's actually well spotted upstairs.
Yeah.
He throws 35% of his four-seamers in two strike counts. That's crazy. Decent put away rate for the slider and changeup too. It's like, I can understand it because as you're saying, it's like the Kodai Senga thing with four-seamers and cutters. Just you throw this, you establish the general area, sure, but they don't know what it is. And I think there's going to be a moment where Tobias Myers figures out that, oh man, this changeup that is currently a 47% strike rate, that should be way better because mm-hmm. it is filthy. I can't express enough when Tobias Myers locates this changeup in the zone, it's like Lucas Giolito. You know, he would just throw changeups over the zone. It didn't matter because yeah. it looks so much like his fastball. That's what Tobias Myers looks like. I think it's so disgusting. PLB hates it right. because it's a lot of mistakes and all that kind of stuff. But it's mistake as far as, sorry, wastes. But the mistake rate is just 1.9%, right? PLB doesn't hate it because it's just so bad in the zone. It's because he just gets it so far out of the zone so often. Only 22% zone rate. And I actually do think the quality ones are just really good pitches. So there is another tier for Tobias Myers. He does have some home run problems, but it's kind of interesting. I'm like, I don't know. When you act like a random number generator, it's kind of fun. You know? And there might be something to that. I'm not going to make you name the next two. Don't worry.
Well, Eric. Thanks. Listen, I'm happy to talk about pitchers on the next one. The names was tough, but I think I did okay with that one. I'm happy.
Okay.
I'm happy.
All right, talking about pitchers, of course, I'm saying, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll start with tier number 10. We'll keep going to tier number 10. Starts number 75, Jose Quintana, 76, Jonathan Cannon, 77, Brian Baio, 78, Michael Lorenzen, 79, Albert Suarez, 80, Ben Lively, 81, Sean Manaea, 82, Luis Severino, 83, Mitchell Parker. I will ask you, though, what's this tier called and why is it called that?
Okay, so there was a show. There was a show, and I'm just making sure that it came out when it did. Oh, would you count April 18th, 2000 as the 90s?
For you? Sure, let's do it.
Yes! This first season of this show, it was a limited thing. So, like, this is your streamers, the beginning of your streamers. It's just, like, one-time use, looks good, and then you don't really touch it after. This is, like, in retrospect, like the dumbest show ever. It was so like, you're going to look back at these guys now and go, why would I ever think this was good? But my God, in the moment, you're like, yes, this is the thing. And that was the first season of Yu-Gi-Oh. Oh my gosh. If you were like me and you watched that first season as a kid, we all know that was the coolest thing in the world. That was just so dope. Okay. And now it's just like, oh gosh, our parents, I can't believe that they put up with us. I didn't watch it.
It wasn't me. Man. I wasn't one of them.
Oh my gosh. It was something else, Eric. So you're looking at these guys and you're going, yeah, this is something that I'm happy with right now for this week. And I'm probably in a week or two being like, why is this guy on my team? How did I ever like this?
I hate that you're saying that. And my boy, what have they done to my boy? Brian Baio.
I know, but I know his changeup isn't earned. There. He doesn't have his command and everything. And it's old skill, new skill, and old skill.
Yeah.
The new skill shows up. That always disappears when the old skill returns. And now we just don't have either one as the old skill hasn't returned yet. It will.
My fingers are crossed for this week against the Marlins.
Yeah. Who knows?
But we'll see. Fingers crossed. And then Jonathan Cannon, you know, you and I are both mildly intrigued, and we'll see what happens with Clevinger coming back. And
they
delayed the comeback. And who knows?
Treble Clev.
Do you?
Well, I think that's so good. Okay.
And it might be the case of, like, if they get rid of Crochet, then the Cannon doesn't lose the spot and Clevinger's in. So
there you go. Oh, right. That's a really great point. I also want to mention that everyone here pretty much has good matchups. Like Suarez gets out Oakland, Lorenzen gets the Rays, so on and so forth. All these guys, like Quintana gets the Pirates. That's why they're all here. The other Mets, the Manaea and Severino, are either the Pirates or the Nationals. This should all be fine.
Yes, it should be fine. And there are some guys that intrigue me in tier 11. It's the streamer tier, and it's a long one. And it starts with number 84, Landon Knack, 85, Spencer Schwellenbach, 86, Zach Littell, 87, Simeon Woods-Richardson, 88, David Peterson, 89, Griffin Canning, 90, Carson Spires, 91, Charlie Morton, 92, Aaron Savali, 93, Jose Soriano, 94, Spencer Arrighetti, number 95, Jordan Hicks, 96, Alec Marsh, 97, John Gray, 98, James Tyam, 99, Mitch Spence, 100, Davis Dannell. What is this tier called? Why is it called that?
This is a show that has many iterations, always has different faces, different things to just keep it alive. And every week there's always something new. There's always, you don't know who's behind the helmet, who's behind the mask. And this would be Power Rangers.
Mm.
And another one where you just go, oh my God, I can't believe. I babysat my cousins when I was like 20. And they were into Power Rangers in Time or something. We watched some movie like that. They wanted to watch it. They were 8 years old or something. And I just, how did I ever like this? I don't understand. But my gosh, was it just the thing that you needed at the time? It's just what you needed when you were a kid. And there it is. Tier 11.
I'm curious. First of all, you know I have a soft spot for Jose Soriano. I'm excited that he's back this week. Fingers crossed. Wasn't an arm issue that landed him on the IL. So hopefully he can hit the ground running. We got to talk about Davis Dannell real quick, just because he was a big name after the 8 shutout innings against the Tigers, and he was added in so many leagues. I think maybe people would have assumed you'd have ranked him higher. I watched the first 5 innings of that start, so I didn't wind up watching the whole thing, but I came away not overly impressed.
Yeah, no.
I know the effort was great. Like, I'm not doubting the performance, but there was nothing that made me think this pitch is legit. Like, it's a collection of stuff that is fine, and he got ahead of a lot of batters for the Tigers, and good for him. He commanded that well, and he got called strikes. But I'm not optimistic that anything resembling this is going to carry over.
Yeah. I mean, it was still a blame it on the Tigers. And to quote me from the roundup that I led with him, I was watching this one, felt a bit strange, and I'm still a bit shocked that he produced such a good line without an electric arsenal or elite command. He did locate generally in the right direction. Hey, here's sliders over here. Here's changeups over here. Here's fastballs. Oh, wait, just always in the zone. I wasn't that impressed with him. 13 IVB, not great. A more than flat, so slightly above average flatness to it, but 45% CSW, 17 called strikes in the four seamer. Is that going to last? No. That's not going to be the thing. So I think the Tigers put themselves in holes often, just trying to get to better counts, and then you would just give it fastball. Like, nope, you're behind now. And then go to the slider and change up and so on. So, yeah, I don't really think that Davis Dannell is anything special, but he has a decent matchup this week, and like, fine. Let's go. We'll go with him. But I really don't feel like, oh man, I got to get Davis Dannell on my teams. I don't think so.
I agree. Anybody in this other tier besides just saying how great Jose Soriano is that you feel like you need to talk about?
Nah. I mean, he's coming back from injury, and we don't know how that messes people up. So there's that. I do want to mention I feel like Landon Knack gets overlooked. And it's kind of interesting to me because he'll go like 5 innings and get you a win constantly. Like for the Dodgers, Nick, not constantly. He's only has one win. Fine. He'll go 5 productive innings or close to it. He literally has gone 6 games now and not allowed more than 2 runs in any of them. It's been 1 run or fewer in the last 4. And sure, he's limited to like 65 to 70 pitches. 5 innings, 4.25 and 4.2, but like 3 earned runs in those last 4 games. He had 7 strikeouts in that game against the Giants, and he was even pushed to 76 pitches because probably they were trying to get him to the end of that 5th, and he allowed 2 hits, and fine, that was it. But I don't know, he's a really good slider, and the fastball has good IVB on it. And I mean, like, not just good, like elite, 18 to 19 inches of IVB with actually being somewhat flat. That's a 5.46 PLV four-seamer, which is nuts. So that's cool. And I think over time, the Dodgers are going to be needing more of Knack actually going longer than just 5 innings. With Paxton being blown up a bit, You might see that moving on. Buehler is hurt and Bobby Miller, we hope that's okay. And so on. It's like, Knack, can you please go more than five? Or bullpen needs it. You know, don't overlook Landon Knack. I think he's still getting good matchups and can still be productive.
Yeah. Well, wild to me also that, you know, David Peterson pitched pretty well today against the Nationals, but the whiffs weren't there. Six whiffs on 44 swings. And it was weird because in the two prior starts, like the strikeouts were what was intriguing, but the rest of it was like the command isn't really great. And like five walks against the Yankees and what's going to happen. And this time it was like 28% CSW, like pounded the strike zone with the sinker and the whiffs weren't there. But I think Peterson was a glorified streamer anyway. You were pitching him in a two start week, but he's going to remain in the Mets rotation for at least the immediate future.
Right.
And so, you know, maybe interesting if you get a chance in some good lineups there or against some attractive lineups to stream against was what I meant to say.
Nice. Yeah.
That's going to do it for us today for the whole 100.
Wow.
We went a little long, but, you know, it happens. Anything you need to promote? Anything you want to let people know is coming down the pike?
I mean, I just want to say, Eric is always going to say the tagline. I'm not going to say, we might go a little bit long in this podcast. Just say, we might go a little bit long. It happens is now the new one. No, I mean, it's, I'm traveling a bit still. This is a busy summer for me. So, sorry if I'm not going to be able to stream next week, guys, but, I'm hard at work doing the pro dashboard and mobile stuff. So
yeah,
I'll have more to report on that soon. I should be super, super fun. And we might have opportunities for lifetime subscriptions again, opening in maybe September or October. So be on the lookout for that. What you got, Eric?
Well, first of all, you're an incredibly hardworking person and you're allowed to take some time for yourself. It's important to work-life balance, man. It's important to take some time for you and unplug a little bit. So I'm here for it. I will also be taking some time for myself, but not until August. Still, I got a Pitch Mix article coming out, Mixing It Up on Wednesday, NBC Sports. I think I'm going to look at the Davis Daniel debut just because he was trendy, but I'm looking at some interesting Josh Winkowski back in the Red Sox rotation. They've changed his cutter. Got some other guys I'm going to discuss. And then, yeah, just the Wednesday, Monday and Wednesday, Roto World Baseball Show. Check that out. And then I do a Q&A Tuesdays at 1. I will tweet that out always. I'm at Samsky NYC on Twitter. So if you want to just chat baseball, a little Q&A. If you do Nick streams and you want to talk baseball, or if Nick's not streaming on a particular day and you want to talk baseball on Tuesday, 1 p.m., we'll do it with... I'm doing it with James Schiano tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
Also of Pitch A List. And, you know, James and I have been doing it for 3 weeks now and we're chopping it up and it's fun. So,
oh, James, fantastic.
Yeah. It's been a good time. So, cool. So you can come join us on YouTube at 1. And I will tweet that out on my Twitter handle. yeah. So check that out. And that's going to do it for us tonight. I am Eric Smolsky, Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I'm going to give Frazier one more chance right now.